Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Show. It's brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Shafstall. I'll be your host tonight, and I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida. I'm also a survivor of child abuse. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over discussing the taboo of childhood abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tonight's show is an open mic show, question and answer. We do have Dr. Jaime Romo with us. He is a survivor and an educator. He's calling in from California. If you'd like to call in and join the show, tonight would be a great time. We definitely need some support on the panel. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And it looks like I got Dr. Romo in the queue. I believe that's Dr. Romo. Good evening, Dr. Romo.
Hi, Tammy. It's nice to hear you.
Well, it's a pleasure to hear you as well. It's been a while. No one else has called in so far, so it's just me and you. Hopefully some other folks will call in, but we know we have a lot of people who stream in that may be listening that chooses not to call in. So we'll just push mm-hmm. forward. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I am. Okay. I do have kind of a topic, but, I just spent a weekend backpacking, and it was good. I guess I'm out of our environment every once in a while, and to be up and was up in the Western Sierras near Sequoia National Park. This lake, And I found myself recalling some old grief from a good friend who died some 27 years ago. And, you know, all this time it's been positive, you know, appreciation and all kinds of things. But so I just share that. It's like for our ongoing need to give ourselves space to see what else is there that needs to be acknowledged. And so anyway, it was a great weekend.
Okay, good. Sometimes we do have to get out of our element, and we do. Sometimes memories come back like that, right?
Yeah, very, and it's all good. And it, it's in my a day-to-day, you know, interactions with folks who are dealing with, you know, big levels of change and loss and grief and, you know, finding meaning in their life, it's helpful for all of us to make sure we take care of ourselves.
Absolutely. No, I've been really, really, really stressed out at work. I don't know if I've mentioned it, but I work at a yacht club in South Florida. And it's been, you know, just my work life has been just absolute torture. And the stress, you know, the stress and the elements from the stress have been overwhelming for me. So, you know, sometimes we just have to step back and take care of ourselves. And, you know, I'd love to take a vacation, like you said, just get out of my element and heal a little bit. But, you know, at least some of the pressure and stress is coming off of me. So that's good. But, you know, it just, you know, I find myself crying. Yeah, I told my boss yesterday, I said, I almost never cry over work issues and what I'm dealing with. I think I've cried 3 times.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just, you know, life becomes overwhelming sometimes. Like I said, no one else has called in at this time, but I know that a lot of folks do stream in. If anyone is listening, please call. We could use the support on the panel. It's 646-595-2118. But we know people do listen, Dr. Jaime, so let's move forward. And if there's a topic that you want us to discuss, something on your heart, something that, you know, you'd like to, you know, bring out, please do.
Sure. So, well, one, and it's not a direct response to you, but I think it relates. And it does relate to the topic, which is I was just listening to this book by Gabor Mate called The Body Keeps Score. Mm-hmm. And in it, mm-hmm. he just makes all kinds of you know, clarification of how our bodies respond to different kinds of trauma or, you know, things that challenge our sense of self. You know, he's a doctor and he's a trauma expert. And so I'd like to, this last part, he talks about the 7 A's, the letter A, of healing, becoming more whole. And so I think that's the topic. But before that is linked to that is the choices that we make. And someone, a colleague, invited me to this forum, a 3-hour kind of presentation by this group called Landmark. I don't know if you know of them. They're an iteration of EST back in the 70s and 80s, I guess, which I think in its earlier version was not very friendly. It's probably very heavy-handed. Don't have first-hand experience with it, but in any case, this Landmark is all about, you know, who do we really want to be? You know, what if all of our background stuff was like not a stressor? You know, if like we weren't recycling old traumas or things that get in our way of being our best self, like what would we do? And so I kind of offer that, you know, they asked me and I said, well, I'm doing that, you know, like I'm going to create a trauma resolution center in 5 years. And this is, I'm going to get certified by the end of this year. I'm setting this up now. I'm going to do a workshop as part of my certification next month. And then I'll do another one and that should be it. And then I'll start doing regular trainings. And so, I mean, so like it's a relevant question in general. And I know for me, it's like, yeah, what do I really want to do? And what do I need to do to get there? And so part of that, all that's to say, the topic is kind of how, what are some things that we need to do to heal? And it will look, you know, different in the specifics for every person, but he lays out these 7 letter A's of healing. And actually, I only got through 6 of them. And the last one, I'm just going to say, well, this is what I think it would be. We'll see. Maybe it'll be different. But he says that my thought is we could just talk about each one, you know, and see how that resonates or what insights, what we've learned related to those. But I'll just tell you what they are, the seven, the six plus mine. He said the first one is acceptance, and the second is awareness, and the third is anger, the fourth is autonomy, the fifth is attachment, and the sixth is assertion, and the last one I'm going to add, because I'm not sure if this is what he would say, but I'm saying appreciation. And so he does, he talks about cases and examples and what he means by how when we really take those up, how relevant they are to our well-being, to our emotional health as well as then our physical health. And, that's my thought, talking about healing. You know, what are some education related to what we might do more of or differently, given our own experiences, because he's writing all about, people who have had either direct, trauma and abuse or things that happened that they didn't even realize were abusive, and they denied, and it resulted in all kinds of, disease and health, and so that's my thought.
Okay. Well, I wrote them down: acceptance, awareness, anger, autonomy, attachment, is it assessment, and appreciation.
Assertion.
What is the
The sixth one was assertion.
Assertion. A-S-S-E-R-T.
Yeah.
I can't even read my writing. I was writing it really quickly.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. And hopefully some other folks will call in, but that's okay if they don't. Folks who are listening, again, I'll give you the number one more time, 646-595-2118. Well, let's start with awareness. I know the first one is acceptance, but I want to start with awareness because, a lot of times we're not, like you said, you're not even aware of what happened to us. And a lot of us survivors are very aware of what happened to us. Sometimes we block it out. It comes back and triggers. But most people know, that they have been abused, even if they block out the gory details. Being aware of it is part of it. And, the acceptance of it, that's tough. The acceptance, being aware of it, that's pretty given. Some people, like you said, they're not aware of, that was even abuse because it's normal behavior. They grew up with it ever since they can remember. It's not okay to call, let me give you an example. It's not okay to call your kids dumb and stupid. But a lot of people don't realize because it happens all the time and it's so common that's abuse. Mm-hmm. I mean, telling your child that you're dumb and stupid and worthless is abuse. It's verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids aren't even allowed to use the words dumb and stupid. I don't use them. They're not even in my vocabulary because I was told that's so much of a child. So, a lot of times, understanding, why we behave, you call somebody dumb and stupid as a kid and they grow up, they may not realize why they think they're dumb and stupid. They may they just assume they're dumb and stupid and they're not. So I get the awareness that, if it's severe abuse, that they're probably aware of it, but there's a lot of things we may not even be aware of that is actually abuse. Acceptance
well,
is tough because, go ahead.
Can we stay with awareness for a minute?
Yeah, let's go back to awareness, Okay.
I just want to add, I think you've added a lens about not even recognizing our own experience and what is abusive, traumatic. What he talks about is kind of related to that. It's awareness of our emotions, and our emotions are kind of they're data. They're teaching us something. They're giving us telling us that we need to do something or that we need something. You know, he talks about, he says, Reagan's biographer said that Reagan expressed the opposite of how he felt. And, Gabor Mate talks about how so many patients are just out of touch with their emotions and they're out of touch with their own bodies. And because he talks about awareness as being aware of sometimes we may have an unconscious idea that we can't face our emotions. And so, just knowing that we may be blocking, that it's a good thing to be aware that maybe we have a difficult time with our emotions, or paying attention to our gut feelings, and learning to trust them, that they're giving us some information, or being aware of, in the recovery side, in the healing side, of our stress responses, like the pounding of our heart, or headaches, or sweating, or frequent urination, or dryness of the mouth. I mean, there's some physical signs that we have something going on, and we need to be aware of our bodies or emotionally, like anxiety or loss of interest in things, or behavior like being impulsive or more irritable or having a really strong reaction or really a underreaction to things. And so it's another level. There's being aware of the past, but then there's being aware of the present, and that being part of then leading us to work differently, not suppress and disconnect, or not like be triggered, and like just react. So I just wanted to add that. I think what you said is right on. Yeah.
Thank you. One of my favorite inspirational psychologists is Dr. Daniel Goleman. I just absolutely adore his work, and I actually bought two of his books because at work I'm dealing with someone who has been and even in my personal life just emotionally inept, and understanding how to control our emotions and the five components that the five key elements that Dr. Daniel Goleman gives is self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. Being aware, that we sometimes, let our emotions get out of control. If we don't even realize it, how can we pull it in? It's where self-regulation comes in. You have to be aware that you're out of control emotionally and pull it in, with self-regulation. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? I feel myself. I did it today. I was in a Zoom meeting with a cohort that was just saying just crazy stuff. And I felt myself getting angry, and I felt myself, getting out of control. And I literally had to reel myself back in and, self-regulate my emotion. Because I was on a Zoom meeting with 10 other people, and, he just said something bonehead. And, I had every right to put him in his place, but it wasn't appropriate. I couldn't let my emotions get the best of me in that situation, because then I lose. So.
Yeah. And, that relates to this other one. I don't know if we can skip around, but, it sounds, when he talks about anger, it's a huge thing, because we may have been exposed to anger in, of course, ways that are really unhealthy, whether they're direct or indirect, whether physical or emotional. And so growing up, people may, and a lot of people in his book, his studies, are people who have repressed anger. And so his book is like so many examples of not that it's a single thing, but someone either overreacts by blowing up or underreaction basically by suppressing anger, it correlates to all kinds of disease and physical health issues. And so there's a kind of a pattern of over protective parents who kind of may, or I'm sorry, I can't read my own writing. Maybe it's parents who blow up with their anger and then the child suppresses. And it may give them the message that anger is like dangerous and, or, you know, something we can't have. And here you're given an example of, you know, having anger. It's something, genuine anger, which, you know, is a response to something that is not good, not right. And then we have to figure out how do we respond, right? So he says that genuine anger is empowering. And actually when we can, you know, use it, then it's even, he says, relaxing. That there's a physiological response that's different compared to anger that we see as, anger that's just automatic and kind of comes out without us being able to step back and recognize, well, what is going on here that needs a response and what kind of response? It's a difference between anger and rage. So he says anger doesn't require hostile acting out. You know, it's a physiological response. It's information, a response to a perceived loss or threat. And anger is about respecting boundaries, standing up our own behalf, but not doing harm. So, I mean, there's a lot to when it's, you know, coming at us or when it's around us or when we express it or when we internalize it and suppress it, that those things can really be toxic. Right? But then on the other hand, to learn, I guess, little by little, that it's not in itself a bad thing. It can be very, you know, helpful for us to figure out what needs addressing. And,
you know, that's very interesting
that,
because, go ahead, sir. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, it's just when we do that, actually, it can go through us and be something that doesn't stink and linger and, you know, carry on and residual for us.
Absolutely. You know, because we always hear that anger is bad. I like that concept that anger is a good thing. We have a right to, especially as child abuse survivors, we have a right to be angry. Someone stole our innocence. Someone beat us. Somebody neglected us. You know, that we have a right to be angry about it. But I think you're right. You know, if we let it go into rage and that anger comes out, the action from the anger can be very damaging. You know, like I said, we have a right to be angry, but it's how we use it and get through it that can make a difference. I mean, I know people who just, they're angry always angry, you know, and, you know, we have a right to be angry because what happened to us was bad, you know, but, you know, we've got to also learn how to monitor our own behavior. Like you said, not let it go into rage and lash
but
out.
Also,
and
the monitoring could be in itself tricky. I mean, a lot of these cases that you brought up where people were, you know, not wanting to do, you know, be the bad kid or by expressing anger. And so in that suppression, it actually did some damage. And so it is a learning. I mean, I grew up with, you know, very explosive father, alcoholic, violent father. And so anger, it was a hard thing, you know, because I internalized that it was going to do harm. But I think what it also did is it made me not understand that I could be like angry in a passive way, like passive aggressive, or angry in ways that didn't do harm, created distance, or I channeled in a different way, like more constructive, like competition. But that was also could be real destructive. So that learning to manage it or monitor it, I think is tricky. At least it's been for me a real process to acknowledge and just then figure out rather than like what happened in the past. I mean, one extreme example was years ago, I developed these like blisters in the bottom of my feet. It was the weirdest thing. And I didn't realize that was a wake up. That was my body telling me that I pushed my anger as far as I could down, right? And it was like literally trying to get out the bottom of my feet. And that led to, I wasn't even conscious at the time to say, this is a situation I really don't want to be in. You know, it turns out that I left that situation, but, you know, not making the connection really that directly. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a process.
You know, I'm one to where doing it. I joke, I told my boss the other day, I don't stew very well. I got to get it out because I know that if I hold it in, I'll explode. Eventually, it'll come out in darts and arrows at people. So I've learned, you know, through my own personality that it's best for me to, you know, to not deal with it right away, give a little pause so I can gather, you know, my composure and make sure that I'm emotionally mature about it. But I can't stew in it either because then it'll come out, you know, just I'll stew in it, I'll think about it, and the next thing I know, boom, 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 and I've spit it out at everybody in a way that's not healthy for them or me. But I have to get it out. I don't think I'll ever have high blood pressure because I don't hold stuff in. You know, I'm very direct, very open, very to the point. Let the chips fall where they may.
And that's great. I mean, he talks about the correlation between cancer, basically with people holding things in, you know, and suppressing that anger, you know, or saying, I had a great childhood. And at the same time, not recognizing, you know, that they did feel unsafe or like, you know, like there were certain demands that they had to meet that disconnected them as kids from their own needs or feelings. And anyway, there's that one level of holding it in seems to show up in many of the studies for cancer. And then the other of blowing up relates to kind of like, you know, heart disease. So I'm glad that you don't hold on to it. And
I try my best. You know, I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. 20 years, I just spit it out, you know, right then and there from thought to mouth. And through the years, I've learned to, you know, back up, take a few minutes, and then get it out because I will get it out. And it's not always easy, you know, to be able to express our anger. And I like what you said, you know, that we have a right to our anger. It can be healthy as long as, you know, we deal with it in the right way. You know, if somebody has violated us or, like you said, you know, didn't respect our boundaries, you know, we have a right to be angry about that, whatever the boundaries may be, you know, that we've set.
Go ahead. Well, I was just thinking, you know, about going back to acceptance, but what were you thinking?
Well, I was going to go to autonomy, but that's okay. We can, you know, we can bounce around on these. I like these topics, but yeah, if you want to go to acceptance, we can. I'm anxious to hear what he says about autonomy and how that fits in.
Well, yeah, they relate, actually. We do autonomy. Basically, let me see if I can figure this out. He's talking in about cases where, for example, a person may have, like there's one example, he had diabetes very young as a kid, and the mom was like in this dilemma of like needing to take care of this child. But then as the child grew and grew, needed to find some autonomy, but, you know, needed to make mistakes, have the freedom to make his own mistakes. And so it's this dilemma, you know, the parent who wants to take care of the kid and at the same time is kind of overprotective, even in the context of, you know, a diabetes, which is life-threatening for him. And so he's saying, you know, that's all of us need to have our own healthy boundaries, a sense of self, you know, and that could be messed with if there's this one overprotectiveness or, you know, the other side, the direct harm to one's sense of self. And he's saying that in a lot of cases, and so it relates to boundaries, you know, the boundaries aren't violated. It's more likely the boundaries were never really constructed because the parents didn't have an understanding of healthy boundaries. So, I mean, if you don't have good boundaries, you don't have a sense of who you are or autonomy. And so the idea of healing comes with wholeness, again, having good boundaries, meaning, now this is my language, you know, permeable, not rigid or not porous. And so he makes a connection to when we don't have that psychic freedom, a sense of who we are, that our body responds. And we have, you know, so that a healing response is to have good boundaries, have a sense of self, and, you know, be willing and free to learn from our mistakes.
Absolutely. You know, when we're dealing with child abuse, so many times that the abuser has so much control over the children. You know, if it's sexual abuse, then they have control over their mind, body, and spirit. You know, you can't tell anybody. They have to keep them, you know, under control to keep the secret. You know, or if they're abusing, you know, physically abusing them, you know, they may be holding them down, locking them down, whatever the case may be. I was in an abusive marriage where my ex-husband was very controlling. I mean, he would time me if I went to go get a pizza, he would time me, and if I took longer than he thought, and I got home and got a beating. You know, where'd you go? What'd you do? And I felt so out of control, and I didn't have control of my own life. You know, I can't even go get a pizza and take extra 5 minutes, you know, because he thought I could get it in 18 minutes, and that took 30. You know, I had to answer for it. And that's a horrible feeling, to not be able to be suppressed like that, where you don't have control, and not only not have autonomy, but no control of your life. So I think, you know, how do we get that autonomy back when, you know, we have been in a controlling situation? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he kind of speaks to that, and he says, if we ask the questions like, what do I value, and what do I want at this point in my life? You know, that we're we have the self-reference. I know that, and this resonates with me a lot, and it was connected to that earlier question in that landmark group. You know, like if you had, you know, no baggage that you're carrying around from past things, you're freed up to be your best self, what would you do? And so I think those are helpful questions. And, you know, yeah, what do I value? What do I want? You know, what is like really resonates with me that gives me a sense of, you know, purpose. Sense that there's something in me that I need to be doing that is mine to do, not, you know, could be related to others, but this is something that, like, I'm like self-authorized, not in a narcissistic way, you know. So I think that's one of the things. And then he says, and it's kind of a summary, that autonomy is the development of that internal center of control. And so when you're talking about someone else, you know, controlling, and so that's the opposite. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, for me, and this goes into acceptance a little bit, you know, a lot of what gave me my autonomy was acceptance of what happened to me. You know, we talked about this a couple of times on the show, you know, what if, and you just mentioned it, what if we didn't have this baggage? You know, where would we be had we not dealt with this? And I firmly believe, you know, with my acceptance, I've accepted what happened to me, but also, and I don't wish it on me. I wish I'd have never gone through it, but I did, and I can't change it, so there you go. So I have to accept it, but at the same time, I wouldn't be the same person. I would not be on the show. I would not be talking to Dr. Romo, inspiring people who may have, you know, streamed in to hear us. I wouldn't know Bill. I wouldn't have the same compassion that I have now. It's part of who I am. And a lot of that, I've had to accept that and embrace it. It sucks that it happened, but it did. And, you know, how do I grow from that? How do I be whole? I mean, I can't just crawl into a hole and die because I endured child abuse, you know, as a child. You know, I'm an adult. I made it. How do I be successful? How do I win? You know, how do I, you know, have my inner clap for myself? And a lot of that is accepting what happened to me and making the best of it and understanding it was a part of, you know, the mold of who made me who I am. I may not have the same compassion. Who knows? I mean, I could have been a movie star. I could have been this. I could have been that. Well, you know, I wasn't. You know, it happened. So, you know, I could have been a not so nice person. You know, I could have maybe not had the compassion for other people that I have now. I don't know. So I've had to accept what I had and make the best of it and, you know, use it as a tool to try and, you know, better myself and help others. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Sure. And it does, of course. And I'm thinking of, you mentioned compassion and you talked about, you know, that acceptance implies a compassionate relationship with ourselves, you know, and acceptance that we are good enough and worthy enough. And he also talks about acceptance as not like resignation that, you know, just things are just crappy or whatever, but acceptance is like refusing to deny what's going on, you know, because that allows us to actually work with stuff. And then I just jotted down this quote. I think it's from, this is a brilliant author. Oh my God. Anyway, you probably recognize the quote, that the idea that not everything that can be faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed that's not faced.
There you go. I like
so
that.
You know, that idea of, you know, we're just accepting past stuff, but also current situations. And and it's not just compassion for other people, but with ourselves. And I think I think he raises that because so many of his examples are about people who have been, you know, caregivers for others and have, you know, denied stuff for themselves that they really needed, you know, out of habit, and over time, then it led to their own physical, you know, health, you know, demise. And so this idea of acceptance is compassionate relationship with ourselves. That's you know, it's a different kind of acceptance.
It is. It is. You know, I think that's what a lot of most survivors of child abuse struggle with more than anything. And for different reasons, you know, people who were, you know, sexually abused, they blame themselves, you know, because, I mean, our abusers a lot of times blame me. You wanted it. You asked for it. You did it. You leaned into it. And so we have such guilt. And even though it's wrong, because it's never, never, never the child's fault, but we've been told that, or, you know, been put down and run down and told that we're no good and worthless. You know, a lot of times survivors, or maybe even after they get through it, they make such bad choices. I mean, so many survivors end up in bad relationships, drug addiction, you know, making bad choices because we didn't, you know, because we learn bad behavior. And then when we do sober up and we get, you know, in a better place, and even if we don't, we hate ourselves. So many survivors, so many victims of child abuse just hate themselves. And I think that's if I could give a survivor or a victim one piece of advice, the thing that I would tell them is learn to love yourself. You know, learn to, you know, you are worth, like I said, you are worthy. You know, you can do this, and you do count. You know, and this world's not better off because, you know, this world is better off because you're here. You know, and that's something that so many struggle with. So how do we get to that point? You know, whether we look in the mirror every day and say, I love me. You know, I had a couple people, you know, in the past 6 months, you need to go look in the mirror. And you know what I told them? I did, and it was smiling back at me. You know, how dare you tell me to go look in the mirror? You know, you go look in the mirror. You know, but I've come to a point in my life where, you know, when I look in the mirror, you know, I'm getting older. I don't like the wrinkles and stuff, but I like who I see. You know, I like the mirror smiling back at me. It wasn't always that way for me. You know, it really wasn't. You know, I've had to learn and build my own self-esteem. And it's tough, but that's what survivors need to do. You know, stop. A lot of times we're beaten, battered, and put down, and all too often, the abuser is out of our life, and we pick up the stick and beat ourselves. And that's not good for anyone.
Yeah.
So, your thoughts?
Well, I've definitely experienced that. Long after the abuse, long after we're out of that particular situation, that we've internalized, that I'm not worth whatever, and so I have to put my worth in something else, in what I do or in possessions or, a huge realization and healing point, I think, is when we realize not just what happened to us, but also what we've done or been doing or continue to do to ourselves, but then also how we've maybe done stuff to others, recognize our impact. There's that huge tension or challenge between, intention and impact. I never intended to be hurtful to people, and the impact has been, if I haven't been present, or if I've been so caught up in rage or whatever, it's had impact on others. It is a natural thing, and I think that's part of that compassionate relationship with ourselves. That when that's genuine, I think it does allow us to at least, not do harm to others, if not maybe have a sense of empathy or appreciation. Like, okay, well, I'm not perfect, and I have to accept, my own unintended, behaviors or impact on others. So, I can acknowledge that give other people a break. Not saying allow bad things to happen. I'm just saying, not have that kind of judgment and disconnect. And that piece of acceptance, I just, said I went backpacking. At the end, the guy I went with, his son took a picture of the two of us. And I looked at the picture. I thought, oh, my God, who is that old guy? And so there's always this judgment. It's like, I look different than I imagine or than I feel or than I used to. And I think there's always levels of acceptance that we have to do. Otherwise, we're not connected to ourselves and certainly not, really in a compassionate relationship with ourselves. Maybe we're in a judging relationship or critical relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That resonates with me.
Right, me too. Yeah, we're tough on ourselves. And I like the point you made, because a lot of times we get caught up in our own pain and our own, what happened to us, and we don't realize through our pain that, we've hurt other people, by not behaving properly, by, making bad decisions. I know, a lot of AA has, that's one of their steps, I believe, is to make amends. Because a lot of times we'll justify it away. I mean, I've seen it, just like, say, for example, as a controller, if you have somebody who's stealing from the company, they usually have it, they grab it and it's easy, and they do it again. They see how easy it is. It always catches up with them. And then in their mind, they start justifying it. I mean, they will literally start justifying, they owe me, or I did this, or I did this, I deserve it. And the same thing, when you treat somebody poorly, you start justifying it in your mind. If you even realize that you've done it, a lot of times we don't even realize we've hurt the other people. We're so focused in on our pain and us, and, we're the center of our attention. So busy being wounded that we don't even see the wounds that we cause other people. And we all do it. I mean, it's inevitable. Sometimes we don't mean to, sometimes we do, but.
I think, there's this back and forth between, it makes sense when we have experienced different things in our life that are abuse and that are traumatic. I mean, that's the big shift of trauma-informed care, is saying not what's wrong with you, but what happened to you. And that's a starting point, a compassionate starting point. And then these, I do like that he's kind of saying, if we do more of these things throughout our life, or even in the midst of like when people are faced with health, you know, crisis, it's not too late to practice these things, acceptance of ourselves, you know, awareness of our body, you know, anger that we feel and how to kind of work with it. Mm-hmm. And having a sense of self, just continue to know who we are and having good boundaries. And that leads to the next one.
Okay.
So attachment.
Okay.
He talks about attachment in connection with others. Basically that a lot of the cases he presents where people like were toughing through life, or their diagnosis of whatever, cancer, and it wasn't until after, right, they got through that first round and, you know, it seemed to have beaten cancer at that point, that they let other people know. And basically saying, you know, there's so many studies that show that with people without contact, you know, people who are kind of lonely, because they're just, you don't have to be lonely because you're alone, but people who are disconnected from others or from themselves, they suffer the greatest risk of illness. And he said those with emotional support have a better prognosis no matter what the disease. And even links it back, this idea of attachment, to anger. He used this one case study that behind this person's anger was a desire for connection and contact and intimacy, which then requires vulnerability, and which is difficult if people have been abused. But to recognize that for us to heal, we need to recognize we're no longer those helpless children who might fear being vulnerable. But we have to seek connections, and this relates to something that, you know, Brené Brown, are you familiar with her TED Talk, Power of Vulnerability? Went viral, and she's since left her teaching job, I think, as a sociologist.
What's her name again?
Brené Brown, The Power of Vulnerability. It's a TED Talk that kind of launched her. But she's researches about shame. That was her focus, and it, you know, opened up all kinds of stuff about vulnerability and how critical that is for us to be happy. And so it just links. That's not something that Gabor Mate was saying, but I linked it to, you know, behind sometimes this anger is, you know, a real desire for connection, and we're better off basically when we're connected with and supported with others.
No, I'm not familiar with her writing, but it sounds very, very interesting. Sometimes we get detached, and how do we, a lot of times we don't trust people. You know, how do you, you know, mm-hmm. you're right. A lot of people will feel, and I felt this myself, you know, lonely, vulnerable, by myself, one interaction with somebody, want a partner in life, you know, and my walls are thick. I mean, my walls are very, very thick. Even now, even at the healed point that I'm at now, I've got a very thick wall around me always. Now, I'm an outgoing person. You know, and I still interact with people. I don't trust people. I feel like that I can interact with people and have relationships with people. I just don't expect a whole lot from them, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, but that's just who I am. But, you know, how do you build those attachments? How do you get out of your own head? So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, 3-hour thing that I was a part of, you know, last week, there was that question, you know, what gets in the way if you really reach, you know, stepping out and becoming, you know, and doing what you want, that is most like your best self. And I said, well, I've had plenty of experiences of betrayal or, you know, people who had some authority who excluded or who used it, in a way that was not at all helpful for me. And so, yeah, I've this some experience behind being maybe cautious, and mm-hmm. and I don't want that to be the whole story, right? So I can be cautious and take a risk, or cautious and really do more, call it research or investigation about who are people that I want to trust and build, and that's necessary. I just know that. I mean, my motivation is that if I am going to build this center, if I'm going to co-create and lead, and I'm going to need people to support, and that means I'm going to need them to trust me, and I'm going to need to trust them. And so the and piece is real important. And so, yeah, I hear my own experience of, and sounds like yours, mm-hmm. reason to mistrust. The and is like, well, I want more, so I'm going to have to take some risks.
Yeah, I trust.
Not,
few.
Not blind trust.
Mm-hmm. Right, not blind trust, but sometimes you have to have a little bit of trust. I just, we're talking about attachment, so I Googled detached. I know what detached is, but just to get the dictionary, separate, disconnect, aloof, to be standoffish. I recognize this in myself. Even though I'm an outgoing person and I build a lot of relationships, I'm a little standoffish at times. I mean, I'll let people, in to a certain point, and then, whoa, stop, you're getting too close, But I can still go out, and be very, assertive. I can be very, very, very interactive, very extroverted. But sometimes I feel, and it's not really a mask because I'm a pretty genuine person, but no one can get but so close to me, because I have been so hurt. How do I 100%, and maybe that's why I'm alone. That's why I can't find a partner. Maybe I do have pushed them away, in the past, and now I'm 56 years old, facing growing old alone, because I haven't built that type of intimate relationship with anyone. And I don't know what the answer is. And I know and then the opposite of that, some people get too attached. They can't mm-hmm. be their own person. They can't have that autonomy because they're so attached to someone else. They're mm-hmm. they're scared to let go and stand on their own 2 feet. I guess you could have the extreme both ways, doctor.
And I like that these words, from a different lens, bring up a different, kind of insight. So, yeah, we can be over-attached and over-dependent. In fact, that's what I was thinking is, and it may not be exact, but my understanding of kind of the Buddhist use of the idea of attachment is, detachment is that it's a good thing. And that, mm-hmm. like, the extreme of attachment is addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And like we can't help, we can't let go of something. We're so enmeshed in that identity, whether it's a person or a thing or activity. And then there's attachment, which is still really limiting because we're holding on to something. And then there's like a step up from that, I guess, would be like an affinity, or I like something, I appreciate it. I enjoy it, but it's not a firm grip, right? And then I think the detachment that I think of anyway is not cold, but it's being present, and that idea of like flowing down a river, not getting too stuck on either side of like holding on or totally being letting go of like not caring, but it's being in a flow or being present and kind of level back to acceptance. So there are those extremes, I think, and I think he's talking about something that seems like paradoxical, like how can we, on one hand, kind of be detached and at the same time very connected, that we do need that connection with others. And, yeah, so it's both and, I think, that makes it more complex. But, and to build that, I guess it's just practice, you know, learning
right.
to continue to be open. Yeah.
And how,
but,
we, how
know,
do we find that happy? Go ahead, sir.
Thanks. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
I think you're going to say, how do we find the happy medium?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. How do we find a happy medium? You know, and maybe it's a journey, you know, a personal journey that everybody has to reconcile with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm thinking of, you know, the more I think of like the next piece, assertion, the way...
Uh-huh.
I heard it, and I, granted, I didn't hear the whole thing from this point on, was it sounds spiritual. It sounds like a sense of connecting to who we are. And he says assertion is our need to declare to the world that we are and that we are who we are. And it's not, I don't think, like inflated sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's not. It's neither acting or reacting. It's just being. Right? So assertion is the recognition of who we are apart from our abilities or what the world thinks of us. It's neither acting or reacting. It's just being. And so to me, that's like, how do we find the happy medium is you know, starting from like, who am I? Right? And not, you know, I'm not better and I'm not lesser than others. And I'm not dependent on what other people think of me, you know, whether it's good or bad. And the more grounded we are in that, I think then that allows for us to kind of find or experience that happy medium of, you know, being present and connected, not dependent.
All right. Well, let me stop you right there because we do have another caller, and I believe it's Carol. Carol, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. It is I.
Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for calling in. Dr. Romo and I have had quite the discussion, so I appreciate you calling in. Welcome to the show. It's been interesting. It's been, you know, we know we have a lot of people streaming in, but we didn't have anybody else on the panel. But we have really, really talked in depth about some bullet points that Dr. Romo brought with us. Acceptance, awareness, anger, autonomy, attachment, assertion, and appreciation. And so we've gone down the line and we've talked about this in a way that, you know, going back and forth and connecting it to the survivor as well. And we're on assertion. So, I guess the question that I'd like to ask, Doctor, is assertion and assertiveness, is that the same thing? Because, you know, I always say, I guess, first of all, is it the same thing, being assertive? It is,
well,
isn't it?
I mean, I think he used the word deliberately, because I thought of that. But the way I heard the bit that I heard from him was that it's not assertive, like in a interaction. It's just knowing in ourselves and showing up in a way that is not about other people. We're not defending, this is how I'm hearing it, or we're not like promoting. We're just in our own self. And
okay.
I think that's a tricky thing because I think the culture that we're in is a very much about self-promoting, and very self-absorbed, and that can be competitive and it can be very kind of self-inflated. And I think it was in the 80s, there was an education, self-esteem movement. And what some people found out related to bullying in schools that happened later with it, there was this confusion about self-esteem and a distorted sense of self. You know, that some then took up that they were more than, or others were less than, and it was a disconnect. So, to me, I'm hearing his use of that word assertion different from assertiveness, and being, as I started to think of it, is more grounded and more spiritual, rather than kind of in a interpersonal way.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, because, you know, assertive being assertive and being aggressive, I've always heard that the difference is the respect for the other person, you know, and how you get your point across, and, you know, assertive, having or showing confident, and forceful personality. But, you know, assert, let's see, I'm sitting back on my computer. State a fact or belief confidently. So, you know, just being confident in yourself. If I'm understanding that correctly.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, there are like maybe two sides of a coin. One is, and maybe not accurate, but this is how I'm making sense of it, that the assertion, the way he's framing it, is for us, and the assertiveness would be for others.
Okay, cool. Well, Carol, I wanted to get you involved. I really do thank you for calling in, and I know you're joining the conversation, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what you've heard or anything that you'd want to bring up. Now, we do have another element that in this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things that we're discussing, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to say hello and put in 2 cents.
I'll put in 5 cents. Assertiveness. I think assertiveness is a good thing, that people who feel good about themselves, they are able to be assertive in a good way, okay, in a positive way. Oftentimes, you know, survivors, they don't have that feeling of being able to be assertive, because they're so still stuck in where they came from, okay? So they don't know how to, they have to learn how to become assertive. And I think that comes in time with healing, on the healing journey, as we always call it, because a lot of times people on the healing journey are still so badly wounded or crushed, their spirit is crushed, they're not able to, you know, look ahead and even think about where they can be 5 years from now, you know, 3 years from now, or maybe even if they're really crushed, you know, tomorrow. They're doing one day at a time. So assertiveness is an interesting word, but I think that it takes a person who knows himself, who doesn't care what other people think about them, who is strong enough within their own personality and their own development, where they can go and be assertive and also do good things. So it's like a combination of things from what I can hear of what you're saying, but it takes time to get there for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Now, Dr. Roma, why don't you, this guy, let me make sure I'm understanding correctly, because you know, we're talking about it being assertive, and you said he's got like a different perspective. Give us a couple of buzzwords on how he's describing this in this article that we're reviewing, Dr. Roma.
Sure. The notes that I took are real brief. Again, says this is our need assertion. So it's different from assertive. Assertion, this is our need to declare to the world that we are, and that we are who we are. Assertion is the recognition of who we are apart from our abilities or what the world thinks of us. It is neither acting nor reacting. It is being. To me, that sounds different than, that's different from how we express to others. It may sound like a weird reference, but there's a show called Ip Man, I-P Man, and it's a, mm-hmm. like a martial arts series, and it's actually based on the real story of the person who was Jackie Chan's mentor. And he just embodies this sense of presence. You know, he's not out to fight, and he has this, you know, deep sense of connection with self and with worth, and that allows him to, you know, intervene with others or to respond to things, but, you know, not in this, you know, reactive, angry way. And the assertiveness might be the interaction, you know, and like trying to protect but not harm or whatever. But it's this sense of just being. I mean, for a lot of, I think it's really relevant for survivors because people can have a shattered sense of self, you know, they've lost a sense of who we are and then what is our meaning for our lives. And so just
this
that
is who I am.
Starting point, I think, is yeah.
Okay. I think if a person feels whole, okay, if they feel whole, and I mean that as, you know, whole, they're at the point in their life, and it doesn't matter how old they are, okay, where they feel comfortable, and they don't feel like they have to prove themselves to other people because, as you say, they just are, and they're able to go out and be and just do what they have. They know their sense of self. They know who they are. So they don't have to prove themselves to other people. They just simply don't.
You know, and if you two think this connects with it too, because you hear that, I'll say, I'm comfortable in my own skin. Is that what that means? Is that how y'all take that?
Yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
I finally have gotten to that
would...
point. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm agreeing. Yeah, please go.
Okay, go ahead, Carol.
Yeah, what I'm saying is for so long, because of all the turmoil in my life, and this is true of all the survivors, for God's sake, we didn't have some good sense of self. We didn't know who we were. We didn't know what we wanted to be. We were more reactive. Instead of becoming proactive, we were reactive to situations that we were in, and that's where the anger and all the hatred and all the feelings of gloom and doom, you know, came into our lives because we didn't know how to move forward. We didn't know what we wanted. We didn't know who we were. So, you know, when people finally do get help, if they have a good therapist, they can guide them and show them. They might have skills that they don't even know that they had, okay, because they're always feeling the hatred of other people, the ones who are abusing them, saying, I'm using this again as survivors, okay, you know, who are abusing them. They couldn't even think about what they could possibly be or do because they were being told what they were and it wasn't positive. So they weren't able to move forward. I know, Tammy, that you've gone through a lot of that.
To be comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was there, too.
They weren't able to be comfortable in their own skin. Yeah.
We were told what we were and it wasn't positive, okay? And if people aren't strong enough within themselves, they tend to believe that, especially if you're a child. So then you have to grow, excuse me, in age, and also you have to mature if you can and get the help that you need so that you can start looking at yourself in a different way, in a positive way instead of all the negatives.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. To build that self-being, you know, to be comfortable in their own skin.
Right.
Okay, well, Dr. Romo, thank you, Carol. I really appreciate those words. Dr. Romo, do we want to talk any more on the CERT? No, we do still have appreciation, but I wanted to get your final thoughts and give you an opportunity to talk about this, you know, this element that we're discussing.
Well, no, I appreciate the idea of wholeness, right? Because he talks about that, and it's something that I really agree with that, and I link it to just being our best self, being integrated, bringing our whole self together.
Right.
And trauma abuse can disconnect us from mm-hmm. our bodies, from our emotions, and disconnect us from a deep sense of who we are. And I think that's why he is like linking these particular things of like, if we do these, you know, proactively or in, you know, after we're in a crisis, you know, as an intervention or as, you know, ongoing growth, this idea of the acceptance. We're not mm-hmm. designing that things are not good. We're just allowing us to work with what is. You know, mm-hmm. not everything can, mm-hmm. that can be faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed if it's not faced. And then that compassionate relationship with ourselves, you know, acceptance of ourselves is good enough and worthy enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, right. you know, the awareness, being connected to our own bodies, so we recognize, we're aware of the signs that are in our bodies or in our behaviors that tell us that, you know, we're disconnecting or we're, you know, in some kind of stress that we need to pull back or take care of ourselves. And, you know, connecting with our emotions mm-hmm. and connecting with the anger that can be useful. And mm-hmm. even though we may have a history of being confused or afraid of anger from others or ourselves, that idea of we're a whole person, so we recognize that there's a connection between our psychic freedom and our physical health. And having good boundaries. We're a whole self.
Mm-hmm.
We have boundaries. And, you know, we talked
right.
about attachment. You know, we are whole, not over-attached to things and not, you know, totally detached, but really having a sense of connection with others that is both.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just saying, yeah, that this idea of being whole is related to health.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I want to say something else here. Oops.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Carol. No, go ahead. No.
Okay. He mentioned something that sometimes I say this on the air, and I really don't know if people understand what I'm talking about at all. Maybe you have to go through it. But anger can be used in a positive sense or a negative sense. Okay. All of a sudden, I realized, as I was approaching my 30s, that no, it's not right what happened to me, and I am mad, and it's okay. I can be mad. Doesn't mean that I do work out, do something negative. But what I do is, I realize that I am a person. I deserve respect. Mm-hmm. I will give respect if I get respect. And to those people that harmed me and made me so much of a disconnect type of person where I wasn't even in touch with my own feelings,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were wrong. And I was their victim at that time. And so
okay.
I think it's very important to understand that anger can be used in a
mm-hmm.
positive sense. And quite frankly, doctor, that's how I got rid of my panic attack. I had them from the age of 9. To 49, and also 2 nightmares.
Uh-huh.
One night I just rolled over having, you know, the same nightmare. It was always the same one. And I just said, I'm not going to say it on air. Tammy knows me. She doesn't even know what I'm thinking. But you know what? That anger used in a positive sense and also in one that was, I deserved to have that anger, okay? It got rid of my nightmares. It took a few times, but it worked. I became
right.
mad.
I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Romo because we talked about that earlier. And Dr. Romo, that's kind of right on to what you were saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's not me. I mean, so this is my, like, recalling what I heard from Gabor Mate in his book, The Body Keeps Score. But
mm-hmm.
The idea that I can find it, actually. I mean, anger is telling us something. You know, it's
right.
Useful. And if we have genuine anger, it can be empowering. And when we use that, it goes through us, so it can be kind of relaxing, right? And that's different from rage.
Right.
The rage that is expressed, you know, tends to lead to heart attacks or heart disease, and the rage that's the anger that's suppressed often is correlated to cancer, not as a single factor, certainly, but it affects our biology. And so, yeah, there's a use for it. It's there to tell us that there's something that's not right. There's a real threat or a real loss. And then, yeah, because I know I grew up with some examples of just very destructive anger and, you know, not used in a way of like, this is teaching something about the situation I'm in or something that should be different. It took a long time to learn, and I'm still learning to acknowledge that and bring it in a useful way. But he talks a lot about the correlation of when people say they don't get, there's a joke, I don't get angry, I grow a tumor instead.
Right.
And that you know, there are studies with people and animals that show that it's more stressful to suppress anger than to actually, you know, acknowledge it and, you know, let it teach you something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it can be very motivating, mm-hmm. too.
Yes.
You know, because if we get angry about something, it's kind of funny because when I was helping Bill pack up the NASCA office over here in Pompano, I was on my Facebook and I was just looking for something, and Facebook has, you know, done something I didn't have access to it. And I was getting angry, and Bill was like, you know how Bill is. I love him to death. You've got to be in control. You can't make it. I said, no, this anger, I'm angry at this, and this is going to make me find this. I'll find another way to come up with that picture. And I did. I sat there for about 10 minutes, and I was like, bam, I got it.
There you go.
And it's not silly or trivial, but that's, you know, that's a silly, trivial, funny, you know, example of how anger can, you know, can motivate us, you know, go punch a bag or something and get that anger out in a different way. You know, how can we use that anger? We have a right to be angry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Antoine Fisher. I remember I loved the movie Antoine Fisher when Denzel Washington tells him, he says, you have a right to be angry. You know, what happened to you was wrong. It's, you know, how are you using that anger in a positive way? You know,
right.
You're just running around being, you know, nasty to everybody. I love that movie. And, you know, Antoine Fisher, you know, it's a true story where he did endure abuse. He is a survivor. But, you know, that's what comes to my mind. What do y'all think?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. Absolutely. It can give you energy, too. And if you, mm-hmm. you know, use all of that all of a sudden that newfound anger that you're not used to, okay, because you're always mm-hmm. suppressed before and not allowed to feel your emotions, and you weren't even quite sure what your emotions were except that you were in a depressed state. And when you're down mm-hmm. in that rut in the depressed state, you can't move forward or even feel. A lot of times you can become numb. People can become numb. I chose to do that at one point in my life also, to be numb towards feeling feelings, because my feelings were too much of sadness. And so then I would therefore take out my feeling of numbness and my sadness, and I wanted to get even more numb, and that's why I did start drinking so heavily at a very early age. And I didn't know how to handle all the feelings that I had in my life, and I didn't know what to do with them, and I was very detached. I was almost DID, almost, okay? But I did integrate my feelings, as the doctor did explain, and I did become one person, and I started to love myself. You see, we so often don't love ourselves, and because we don't love ourselves, then we can do all kinds of destructive things, put ourselves in harm's way even. You know, we can't
Absolutely.
Think straight. That's why it's called a journey. We have to learn all of these things about ourselves. And
sure.
I always tell people, you know, if you know you've hurt someone, you can always apologize. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll accept it, maybe they won't. But at least you realize two things there. You learn two things. Okay, you realize you did wrong to someone, and then you apologize. Mm-hmm. So you did two good things there. And then you move on, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
And that's not just AA, that's just plain life, okay. But
sure.
anger can be used in such a way that it can motivate us. It brings mm-hmm. forth awareness, you know, self-awareness. It's a feeling. All of a sudden, we're in touch with the feeling of anger. And if we use it, again, in a positive way, like the doctor said, then we can actually improve ourselves. We can be a better person, and we can heal.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Carol. Well, you know,
mm-hmm.
we've got about 9 minutes left, a little right at 9 minutes. So we have discussed acceptance, awareness, anger, autonomy, attachment, and assertion. And then, Dr. Romo, you added one, which is appreciation. And I want to give you an opportunity because you added this to this gentleman's list. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, and I want to link it to what Carol just said about choice. You know, I chose
mm-hmm.
this. And I think maybe it may not be as obvious when we're younger, but certainly at this point, we need to choose how we're going to live our physical
mm-hmm.
and our spiritual health. And so this idea of appreciation for me, I mean, there are studies about happiness. People have lived 90s and 100 years old, and they look back and have said, you know, the three big ideas. One is acceptance, you know, recognize that sometimes life is not easy or fair or whatever, but that's part of it, right? It's realistic,
mm-hmm.
and we're not in denial. And the other is, like, then learn to put your attention on something that is meaningful, and, you know, and so that's, to me, where appreciation comes in. I mean, it's very grounding. It enlightens us to what else is going on in the middle of what may be difficult. I mean, it's an expression, we may not be happy with our life, but we can be happy in our life, or with the world, we can be in it. And I think this appreciation of our growth, or appreciation of, you know, even to the point of, like, these things were lousy, I wouldn't want them to have happened to anybody, but they happened to me. And I can appreciate the growth, you know. And you said earlier, Tim, you know, had those things not happened, you wouldn't be where you are now, connected with the people you're connected with. And so there's just a lot of value, I think, in taking inventory of the ways that, whether they're good things or bad things that happen to us at the time, we appreciate, you know, who we are, how we've grown, the things around us, people who have been, you know, our support, the ways that we've learned even from people who have done harm. So to me, that is, I don't know what his actual seventh, you know, A was for healing. So I'll just add that one and invite you to contribute what you think is, whether it's linked to the letter A or not, or if you want to, you know, add to the idea of appreciation.
Well, I think you're right. We, you know, I have come to appreciate, you know, my journey, as Carol called it. You know, it is a journey. You know, I wouldn't be on this call if you know, if that wasn't part of my journey. I may not be the same person. So I understand what you're talking about, and I agree that it belongs, you know, the appreciation. You know, I appreciate, you know, seeing other people. I appreciate watching other people heal. You know, the appreciation I have for,
mm-hmm.
you know, the NASCAR organization that is really, you know, changing lives, you know,
mm-hmm.
for the better. So I have a huge appreciation for, you know, my journey, as Carol calls it. Carol, what do you
mm-hmm.
think?
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate the fact that I've come such a long ways finally, because at one time I was stuck. And then I became aware, like evidently you had been discussing about self-awareness. Go back to square one. What makes me happy? What makes me sad? How can I change any of it if it's negative in the sad part? And then all of a sudden, too, coming out of oneself, when you reach a certain point, you can come out of oneself. And by helping others, no matter how, maybe it's just sitting and having a listening ear. Or maybe it's actual doing, you know, as you progress along in your healing journey, absolutely, you know, doing, working in a soup kitchen, feeding the homeless like I was doing. And I don't go to New York City right now, you know, I love New York, I was born there. But, you know, it's too dangerous. But, you know, to get out and be amongst people, to bring yourself out of oneself and to do, you know, is a very good thing. It's strengthening you. It helps to build self-esteem, and that brings forth then self-love, which someone, you know, we just simply didn't have that at one point. We didn't, you know, we hated ourselves, most of us, you know.
Hmm.
So it's all a matter of steps, taking steps, positive steps, and realizing what does make you stronger, okay? And if you fall back a couple steps, doesn't matter. You just move forward again and keep trying and keep learning about yourself. And as far as the people who abuse us, okay, I don't even think about them anymore. I look at them as people who are so dysfunctional, completely dysfunctional, and some of them, excuse me, were actually a little bit on the evil side. My mother used to say she was a witch, and I think maybe she was, okay? I believe that because I look back. And but it doesn't have the same effect on me anymore because growth has happened, time has happened. I've been able to learn a lot of things about me. I know what makes me happy. And I know that we at NASCA, you know, our mission statement in itself, you know, speaks for what we do. And I'm very grateful for NASCA too. Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you for that. We've got about 2 minutes left. Dr. Romo, first of all, before we go there, Carol, I can't thank you enough for calling in. I really appreciate the support. And Dr. Romo, I appreciate you calling in tonight, and I know the people who are streaming in, and we know we have a lot, appreciate it as well. But I want to give the last 2 minutes to Dr. Romo to maybe do a review because he's come up with acceptance, awareness, anger, autonomy, attachment, assertion and appreciation, and just give you the last 2 minutes, Dr. Romo.
Well, thanks. I mean, I guess I summarize it as, you know, it's this back and forth. Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing. Mm-hmm. You know, that we are who we are because of others. Desmond Tutu has that same idea, like we are who we are because we are in relationship, because we're in, you know, we've been involved and connected to others. And so my favorite quote is that if you're here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you're here because your liberation is bound up in mine, then let's work together. And so I, you know, there's this back and forth between, like, as I acknowledge my own wounds, and I can have compassion and recognize others. And in that helping, somehow I become, hopefully, you know, someone who has more awareness of myself and more better boundaries, and, you know, learning to work with my emotions or anger or whatever comes up, but not in a reactive way, because that, you know, I have a responsibility for others. So there's this back and forth, I think, that all these things kind of speak to me, that about being whole, not just being an individual, but being whole in the
whole
context of our responsibility and our relationships. Anyway, I appreciate all of you and your growth and your time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We are out of time, and that was well said. Well said. I'm gonna say goodnight to you guys. Dr. Romo, it's always a pleasure. Carol, thank you so much for the support. And
you're
gonna
welcome.
End it with saying God bless, thank you. God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was